Chapter 6, A Revolutionary Generation. Betsy Doughty rode her way to legend and lore in the early days of America's struggle for independence. In December 1775, word came that the British Army was marching south from Norfolk, Virginia. Folks in eastern North Carolina feared that if the British kept marching south, their neighborhoods would be as open to invasion as Lexington and Concord, Massachusetts had been when the War for Independence started the previous April. Determined to do something, 16-year-old Betsy left her house in the middle of a cold December night without telling her parents. She mounted a horse and rode through the darkness until she came to the village of Hertford, where she could rally soldiers to defend their homes. At one point, she and the horse waded and swam more than a mile across the Currituck Sound. So young was Betsy that when her father learned what she had done, he took off after her, both to protect her and to discipline her for being so reckless. However, she completed her mission, her parents forgave her, and folks ever since have hailed her as a hero who risked her future to establish a state and create a country. Although there were no written eyewitness accounts of Betsy's ride, some North Carolinians have considered her to be their version of Massachusetts' Paul Revere, who rode out from Boston to warn the Minutemen of an attack by the King's troops. Betsy Doughty has remained in the memory of Tar Heels ever since. All types of North Carolinians pledged their lives and their sacred honor during the time of the American Revolution. Although North Carolina had been a poor and often divided colony, it held its own in the fight for freedom. Its soldiers often served with distinction. Its leaders often sacrificed their fortunes to the cause of liberty. North Carolina even had its own version of the Liberty Tree that had given Boston its fame as a resister of British control. The Germans, who lived on the South Fork of the Catawba River, repeatedly met under a white oak near the present site of the city of Hickory. There they made decisions about when to fight that helped shape the values of their families for generations to come. Their descendants continued to honor that tree until it fell in 1939. Section 1. The Long Road to Independence. As you read, look for the purpose of the Proclamation of 1763 and North Carolinians' reaction to it. How protests against the Stamp Act led to its repeal. Famous tea parties in Boston and Edenton. The beginning of the American War for Independence and the following terms. Proclamation of 1763. Stamp Act. Edenton Tea Party. North Carolinians were caught up in more than just the troubles of the Regulation during the 1760s and 1770s. The British Parliament began to change the way the 13 American colonies were governed. The new policies were designed to make Americans pay heavier taxes and be more under the control of the British. The colonists were very angry that the British Parliament would pass laws without having the colonists' representatives take part in the process. No taxation without representation became the slogan used to protest against this unfairness. Over the course of 12 years, from 1763 to 1775, these protests led to greater arguments and ultimately to violence. The result was the War for Independence that was part of the greater American Revolution. The Proclamation of 1763. The British passed two policies in the 1760s that hurt North Carolina's ability to grow and develop. The first was the Proclamation of 1763. In this proclamation, King George III said there could be no settlement by the colonists on the western side of the Appalachian Mountains. The king had a good reason for the proclamation. He wanted to stop the fighting between the Indians and the settlers. Each fight cost men and supplies, and the king's funds were running low. By keeping the settlers on the eastern side of the mountains and the Indians on the western side, the king hoped to keep colonists safe and save money at the same time. Some North Carolinians ignored the wishes of the king. Many colonists believe they could become wealthier by claiming these free lands in the west. Daniel Boone and others actually explored all the way into what became the states of Tennessee and Kentucky in the late 1760s. Boone, who was living on the upper reaches of the Yadkin River at the time, set up a base camp for his trips at the site where the town of Boone is today. After the Battle of Alamance, many Regulator families ignored the proclamation line and moved into the valleys of the Tennessee River. That area had been designated an Indian reserve. The Stamp Act. The second harmful act of the British Parliament was the Stamp Act, passed in 1765. Because the British needed more money to pay for the French and Indian War and to pay for troops that guarded the frontier along the Appalachian Mountains, they took steps to increase the taxes they collected from the colonists. The Stamp Act required that stamps be used on all kinds of documents. During the 1700s, ships often sailed without paying taxes on goods they carried. Such taxes, called customs duties, were new. The Stamp Act required all ships to have their records stamped with an official seal, and those stamps had to be bought from a customs tax official. The purchase of the stamps was like a departure announcement. Customs officers knew they should visit the ship to verify that the cargo was what the captain said it was. Cheating on buying the stamps or paying the customs duties would lead to the ship being seized, taken by the government. The captain would be taken to a court in Nova Scotia, Canada, where he would be charged and tried by a panel of judges, not a jury. There were several problems with the Stamp Act. There had never been a tax like this to raise money. Even though the tax was very small, many colonists worried that the taxes could increase. Also, the tax was added without the consent, approval, of the colonial legislatures. In other words, the colonists were not asked about the tax, they were simply told to pay it. The next problem was the lack of a jury trial for the ship captain. This violated the rights of Englishmen that colonists up and down the Atlantic coast had come to expect. Mobs protested the Stamp Act in every colonial port. They often threatened the stamp agents with bodily harm unless they resigned and burned the stamps. In North Carolina, reported one royal official, not one advocated for the stamp duty. When the General Assembly protested the new law, Governor Tryon sent the representative home. Soon Edenton, Newbern, and Wilmington passed petitions condemning the governor. When the first ship with stamps from London arrived at Brunswick, local leaders, including Hugh Waddell, a hero of the French and Indian War, told the captain they would not allow the stamps to be sold. When the British seized two ships because their captain sailed without stamps, Waddell and 500 men destroyed the documents that would be used in court against the ship captains. The situation almost led to open rebellion in the Cape Fear. At the last moment came news that the British Parliament had canceled the Stamp Act. Continuing disagreements and protests. The cancellation of the stamp duty in 1766 quieted matters for a while, but the colonists and the British continued to quarrel. While North Carolina was swept up in the regulation, leaders in Virginia, Massachusetts, and other colonies continued to assert the political rights that colonists had come to expect. When the North Carolina General Assembly protested that the king was not doing enough to help the colony develop economically, a member of Parliament claimed that North Carolinians were derogatory to His Majesty's honor. In 1769, Governor Tryon once again sent the assembly home because it was too critical of the British. Even though the regulation showed that the British would use force to get what they wanted, some North Carolinians continued to disobey. Daniel Boone joined with Judge Richard Henderson to start the Transylvania Company, a group designed to settle farmers west of the Appalachians. When the king would not charter Queen's Academy in Charlotte, a Presbyterian attempt to open a college in the colony, the Scots-Irish opened the school anyway. By the time the War for Independence started, it had 80 students. The two sides continued to disagree. In 1770, the same year Regulators rioted in Hillsborough, British troops fired on a group of protesters in Boston. This conflict became known as the Boston Massacre. When the British announced new steps to control the colonists, North Carolinians joined in the protests. Matters came to a head in 1773 when Bostonians disguised themselves as Iroquois Indians and dumped hundreds of boxes of tea into their harbor. They were protesting the exclusive right to sell tea that the British Crown gave to the East India Company. Bostonians and other colonists believed such controls went against their rights to a free marketplace. The event has been known ever since as the Boston Tea Party. The Edenton Tea Party. When the British closed the port of Boston to punish the city for the loss of the tea, the other colonies agreed not to trade with England until matters improved. In 1774, Salisbury's leaders passed the Roanne Resolves, a series of statements that urged their citizens not to import British goods. Roanne County citizens were encouraged to use their own homemade products. That same year, North Carolina leaders sent a ship to Massachusetts full of corn, wheat, and salted pork to help the citizens of Boston. In October 1774, 51 women from around the Albemarle Sound met at the home of Mrs. Elizabeth King on the village green in Edenton. Under the leadership of Penelope Barker, they promised they would drink no more British tea or use other imported materials. Mrs. King served herbal tea that day, and news of the event was carried all the way back to England. Since that time, North Carolinians have remembered it as their own Edenton Tea Party. By 1775, tensions were high in Boston. Fighting broke out when soldiers were sent to seize weapons and ammunition the leaders of the rebellion were hiding in the town of Concord, Massachusetts. Shots fired in nearby Lexington led to a battle at Concord that started the American War for Independence. Poet Ralph Waldo Emerson later described the gunfire as the shot heard round the world. Very soon, North Carolinians heard about the battles and took action to join in the struggle for independence. Colonists were shocked that the troops who were supposed to be protecting them were now seen to be attacking them.